Welcome, and thank you all for standing by. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode all throughout the call. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this point. Now, I will turn the meeting over to your host, Marquis Flannery. Marquis, you may begin.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone, and thanks so much for joining me on the call today. Before I begin, I wanted to mention that I only have a handful of questions that have been submitted so far. So if you do have a question that you would like for me and the leadership team that's with me to address, you have an opportunity to submit those questions now while I'm speaking. So perhaps you can start to do that while I am sharing my remarks with you. So I'd like to start by saying I'm sure that you're all looking forward to the long Labor Day weekend, just as I am. I know how hard everyone's been working, and I really hope that you'll be able to take some time this weekend to step back mentally from your work responsibilities and relax and enjoy yourself with family and friends. With many challenges that we've been facing over the past 6 months, setting aside some time to refresh and recharge is absolutely essential for all of us. So I hope you'll have a chance to do that. As of yesterday, New York State has had 24 straight days in which the statewide COVID-19 positive test rate has been below 1%. Governor Cuomo's office also reported yesterday that hospitalizations for COVID across the state have dropped to 418, a new low since March 16th, and that there was just one COVID death in New York State on Sunday, with no deaths in New York City. Another new low. So thanks to you, everyone on this call, for your role in helping to keep these numbers down. As always, I want to encourage you to continue to keep that COVID-19 curve flat by social distancing, washing your hands, and wearing those face masks. As I've mentioned previously, we are making a special push to make sure our entire staff gets vaccinated against the flu this fall. Starting today, vouchers for free flu shots at CVS and Walgreens, Duane Reade, are now available on the VNSNY intranet. And you'll be getting details shortly on exactly how you can access these vouchers. We're continuing to maintain our patient and member volumes at levels close to where they were before COVID-19 hit our area. So thank you to everyone for helping to make that happen. I won't go through the census numbers for each unit this week, except to say that they're very similar to last week. But I do want to announce that the VNSNY Choice Managed Long-Term Care Health Plan, which we abbreviate as Choice MLTC, enrolled 750 new members for September. Choice MLTC has had very strong enrollment figures throughout 2020, but this represents their best enrollment month of the year. So congratulations to everyone at VNSNY Choice on this excellent performance. In other important news related to our business, 5 U.S. senators, including Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, sent a letter to CMS and the Federal Department of Health and Human Services last week asking them to ensure that home health care organizations like VNSNY get the resources that they need to protect the community during COVID-19. This includes making sure we have access to COVID-19 relief funding and sufficient PPE for our staff, and very important for VNSNY, that they provide more flexibility in allowing us to be reimbursed for telehealth visits. Senator Gillibrand also sent out a press release along with her letter in which I was quoted, stating how important these issues are for keeping our staff and patients safe. This indicates that VNSNY is clearly a priority for the senator, which hopefully will help to produce a positive response from CMS and HSS, the Health and Human Services. Yes, I'm thinking of the HSS hospital. So, closer to home, I want to mention that our VNSNY office in Westchester moved last week to a new location, about a mile from where it had been. There's going to be an article in Frontline very soon that will have more details about the new office. Also, staff who have more than one or more children under the age of 18 living with them have until this Friday to complete the Willis Towers Watson survey about their child care situation. This survey is your chance to tell us what your own child care needs will be this fall as schools reopen. Your answers and comments will be a big help in figuring out the best way to balance everyone's work and home life responsibilities. So if you have a child under 18 and you haven't completed the survey yet, please watch for an email this week from Willis Towers Watson in your inbox, which will link to the survey. I'm also excited to note that so far, over 900 Partners in Care Home Health Aides have completed the home health aide survey being conducted by the VNSNY Research Center. These survey results are going to provide valuable insights in how the healthcare industry can do a better job of supporting home health aides nationwide. So thank you very much to all of the aides who have participated so far. To any aides that are on this call, please consider completing the survey if you have not yet. And please encourage your fellow home health aides to do the same. As added motivation, completing the survey also qualifies you for a chance at a $25 gift card. The Research Center and Partners in Care are sending out another email reminder today with the link to the survey. So again, I hope all the aides on this call will keep an eye out for that. In another step that we are hoping will make everyone's work-life balance better, we're also putting out new guidelines for scheduling meetings, which include keeping all meetings to just 20 or 45 minutes whenever possible, and not scheduling meetings too early or too late in the day. You'll be getting an Operation Workplace email shortly that will spell out the exact guidelines, so please watch out for that email as well. This week, as usual, there are two support calls for our home health aides, one at 12 noon today, and the second one at 1 p.m. on Thursday. We're also holding our all-staff support call on Thursday at 10:15 in the morning. The next support call for staff recovering from COVID-19 will take place a week from now on Tuesday, September 8th at 4:30 p.m. And for staff members interested in joining our parents' support call, please do so on Thursday. There's an email contact on the COVID-19 support calls page on the intranet that you can reach out to get that information. So that concludes my update, and now I will turn to the questions that were sent to me by email. So the first question. Good morning. My question is, what can I do if my patient is going out in the streets more often than is necessary during this crisis? I am worried about being exposed to the coronavirus. My supervisor is not one I can ever reach, and I would really like someone to advise the patient that the situation is serious and the road trips should be reduced and scheduled to avoid both herself and the aide contracting the virus. This is something that should be done without the patient realizing that the aide has reached out for help. So, we will reply to this person directly to share with them to get some more details so that we can do some follow-up. But in the meantime, Andrea or Tony, do you have any recommendations for this person on what they might be able to do to help them? It sounds like this might be an aide who is having this question.
Good morning, Marty. This is Andrea Castellanos. I'm the Chief of Provider Services. As Marty said, we'll reach out to this person individually because it sounds like the client needs some education and to have a discussion about what is really safe activity and what is unsafe activity. And there are ways for patients to be safe or clients to be safe outside. So obviously making sure that when this person goes outside that they're always masked, that they perform hand hygiene, et cetera. If this is a question from the home health aide, the aide can always reach out to the nurse, and the nurse can provide some direct education to the patient. Also, if there's family involved, working with the family to try to educate them is another avenue to go down with this client. So those are some of my suggestions right now, but we'll reach out directly.
Thank you. So next question. If there is a second wave, what indicators will we use to identify that it is underway, and what actions will we take as an agency? So I'm going to start, and then my colleagues may choose to add. So you may be aware that every day we receive information from not only the State Department of Health, the Governor's Office, and the New York City Mayor's Office regarding data related to the positive COVID rates in our area, as well as those individuals, the number of individuals who are showing signs of infection. And as you know, in my remarks, I quoted that the hospitalizations have dropped. There's only been one COVID death in New York State on Sunday, none in the city. And when COVID tests are performed, and there are significant numbers of COVID tests performed, the infection rate in New York is very, very low. So we will continue to monitor those results. And I promise you that our governor and mayor and other officials, including all the health department leadership, are going to be monitoring them even more so. And if there is a second wave, they will announce that wave, and they will make decisions about what can and cannot be done. We're hopeful that New Yorkers will continue to be smart about washing their hands and wearing face masks and social distancing. We've done a great job here in New York so far and our surrounding states, and hopefully we will continue to behave in that way. And then if there is a second wave, we will take whatever actions are necessary to protect our staff and protect our patients. And so it's hard to say what we will do specifically at this moment, because we're very optimistic that there will not be a second wave. I do encourage, as I've mentioned in my remarks, that everyone get a flu shot. I think one of the challenges that we will face as a country is differentiating between the flu and COVID. And so people who get flu shots are less likely to get the flu. So if we can minimize the incidence of the flu, we minimize the worry that people might be COVID positive when they're not. So I will now turn to Andrea, Tony, and Michael to see if they have anything they'd like to add to what I just said.
It's Michael Bernstein, and I do. Marky, thank you. So Michael Bernstein, and I'm our Chief Administrative Officer. So BNSNY has built up a 90-day supply of all of the important PPE that we would need if, in fact, there is a second wave. And as you all know, when this all started, it took, you know, we had to acquire all the PPE, but now we have planned and we have an outside warehouse, and we have a distribution solution that would enhance our ability to get the PPE to people. So that's one of the things that we have done. The other is we have had 27 different groups assembled for what the industry calls a hot wash, which means a review of what we did well and what we did poorly throughout the pandemic so far. Those results have been compiled, and they're great learnings for us in order to ensure that if there is a second wave, we're in a better position to move quickly and efficiently and get things done. So those are two of a number of steps that have been underway to prepare us if, unfortunately, this pandemic, comes back hard. Thank you, Marky.
Thanks. Andrea or Tony, anything else that you'd like to add to the remarks?
Sure. This is Tony Dawson, the Vice President for Quality and Customer Experience. So we just also remind you that the CERT team is still in existence, and we're still here every day to help you. And so we monitor the number of calls and monitor those occurrences from staff. So that's another way that we keep an eye on what's going on with the pandemic and keep an eye on the trends and what's happening. So they're there to support you, and if anybody has any questions, please reach out to them. We're here to help you. Thanks, Marky.
Thank you very much. So next question. Any updates on bike reimbursement? It seems counterintuitive to incentivize driving over biking. So my response to that is generally you're riding a bike, you're not incurring gas expenses, you're not incurring parking expenses, and you're not incurring toll expenses. So the goal of it's not incentivizing driving, it's reimbursing for expenses that people are incurring to be able to get where they need to go. If people are utilizing Citibike and there is an expense associated with that, I can ask our Human Resources Department to evaluate whether or not we can reimburse for Citibike. But you know, it is not just using the money to reimburse for expenses that don't exist. So, and I'll ask my colleagues if they have any other thoughts or suggestions related to that question.
This is Michael again. The only thing I would say is thanks to these calls, last week there were some questions about bike storage if you use your own bicycle to get to the 220 location. And last Friday, there was an email sent and a posting on our intranet with detailed information about what needs to be done. And one of our colleagues in the Human Resources Department, Amy Packer, volunteered to, her name is in that email, to assist. So the feedback that we get through these calls is very helpful to make sure we can communicate good information out to people. Thanks, Marky.
Thank you. So next question. Thank you for all you do. I've been furloughed for almost 5 months now, and I heard from someone that if you're furloughed for more than 6 months, it will become a permanent layoff. Is that true? How long can this furlough last? Are there any updates on when the staff from the Education Department in Partners in Care will be able to return to work? I am waiting patiently so I can return to the job I love. So I was not aware that if someone is on furlough for more than 6 months, it is a permanent layoff. We will look into that. I have not heard that from our Human Resources Department, so we will follow up to find out if that is in fact true. We are trying very hard to return staff to work as quickly as possible. One of the challenges with the Partners in Care Education Department is our ability to train staff, and with social distancing requirements, it has become a bit of a challenge. But I will ask Andrea and Tony if they have anything that they can add related to this question.
So good morning again. This is Andrea Castellanos. We are evaluating bringing back some of our in-person education training for new aides. And we do expect sometime at the end of September to initiate some classes. Likely not the volume that we had before because of the difficulty and challenges that Marky described. So as soon as we have information about the dates that will reinitiate those classes and the people that we're going to be asking to come back, we will be in communication with that team. We do understand this is very difficult for that team. And as soon as we know for sure, we will be in communication.
Thank you. There was a email from a home health aide who's having challenges getting through to someone in the office. So we've already forwarded on to others within our Partners in Care organization, and she is being followed up with at this time. So I won't read those because it's already being addressed. Next question. I want to know if the NSNY is prepared with a backup plan in case a second wave of COVID and the flu hits the field staff, causing a shortage of nurses and therapists to see patients. So we are actively recruiting because that is something that we have, you know, been working on on preparing for rebuilding our workforce. We need to do that anyway, so we are actively recruiting staff so that we can continue to be able to accept patients. Reality is that, you know, we need to hire more staff and we need to retain more staff, and we are working aggressively to make that happen. If COVID hits and the flu hits, and we, you know, hopefully our staff will have had flu shots and we minimize the impact, but if we have reductions in availability of field staff, unfortunately, what happens is we have to reduce the number of patients we take under care, and that's not good for New York. So we are looking to build our workforce, but we cannot hire and have staff on the payroll when we don't have, you know, adequate work for them. So it's a balancing act to be able to manage that with a fine line. Anything further that, Andrea, you'd like to add to that?
No, Marky, I think you've covered that question well. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question. What are some examples of changes proposed from the hot wash? Michael, do you have any information on that yet? I have not heard the results of the hot wash yet.
Right. Thank you, Marky. It's Michael Bernstein again, Chief Administrative Officer. So first of all, I think the person who asked the question is on the call, and I appreciate the fact that we're able to ask questions in real time. And I'd like to give you a sense of an answer, but I also want everyone on the call to know that the hot wash has just been completed, and even Marky hasn't seen the recommendations yet. So I don't want to get out too far in front, but I want to be respectful of the desire to understand what we are contemplating doing and what we are considering doing. So here's an example, and we are already looking at a new system that would allow us to reach staff in an emergency in all business areas to enhance the communication system that we have previously used. Another thing that we're going to look at is how to better centralize and communicate updates on regulatory information, which seemed to change almost daily with respect to both our health plan business and our provider business. There are a number of other areas. One other example is, have we created the right tools and resources, or can we do more to remotely onboard new hires into the workforce? Like Marky was just talking about, if we had sickness and call-outs, would we be able to effectively onboard new clinical staff and other staff? So thanks for the question. More to come on this as it rolls out. Thanks, Marky.
Thank you. So just a follow-up on the bike question is, you know, this person indicated some expenses they have each year in bike maintenance. So, again, I will ask our Human Resources Department to look at this and evaluate if this is something that we can consider in addressing. So more to come once I hear back from HR. The same person also just is indicating that they appreciate the opportunity that we have given to answer questions directly, and I'm glad that we can do that, and I'm glad that you're taking the time to ask the questions, because we want to hear directly from you. So I appreciate the feedback. Next question. While we wait to see how COVID and this flu season go, will we be able to continue to work from home? My concern is that with the flu season approaching, there is a likely chance we will get a second wave and would like to continue to work from home while we see if there's an increase in COVID cases. So flu season is not going to result in a second wave of COVID. They are two different conditions that are so there's a risk that we can confuse them, but it is not, flu is not COVID. Right now, we expect that we will continue to have some staff working from home, but we are looking at where there are certain areas where some staff are better served to be in the office. There are some staff that wants to be in the office, and we have been conducting surveys to evaluate how we can best address operational needs as well as employee needs. So we will be, and we are also managing our social distancing. So we are, you know, addressing our workspace in such a way to make sure that those who are in the office are able to be safe. So We are looking to increase the number of staff that are working from home, and we will be addressing that on a department and role basis. And so nothing will be sprung upon you or anyone else. We will address this in the most feasible way possible to take into account employee concerns. Any other thoughts that people may have about that? Okay, next question. My main concern is the universal precautions, preparation, and keeping the supplies available. So I understand your concern about keeping supplies available, and we are watching it like a hawk. So I'm going to go back to Michael and ask Michael to reassure you about what we're doing to make sure that we have the supplies available for our staff.
Thank you, Marky. We believe that we do by setting a goal of having a 90-day supply and having a pipeline to refill that supply if we have to use the important items, from face coverings and face shields to gowns and gloves and so on. And we believe that we have found an appropriate way to store and distribute those supplies to all parts of the workforce to make it as safe and effective as possible. So we learned a lot from the last 6 months. We think we've made improvements, and we have a high degree of confidence that we can keep supplies available. Thanks, Marky.
Thank you. There's another question. I understand things being considered for workers with children under the age of 18. What about workers with elderly or sick parents? Please be assured we are taking that into consideration as well. So if I'm not sure if the survey addressed that, and if it did not, we will make sure to capture that. And again, you know, people will have an opportunity to speak with their supervisors, and if you have individual concerns, you need to voice them, and we will do all we can within reason, and we have to make sure we meet our operational needs to accommodate staff with concerns. So we've done that so far, and we will continue to do everything we can to protect our staff and their family members and the patients that we serve. Next one. I've been informed that clinicians in Manhattan are expected to be driving patients to patients now that parking passes have been provided by the city. It is evident in the geography of case assignments. Will VNSNY provide a travel stipend to these clinicians at least to the end of the year when the passes expire, as done in the other regions? I don't know, Andrea, if you have any information about this. We may have to respond to this person directly.
Yeah, I think we can take this offline and look into it. I think this question has come up in the past, and I don't want to answer it right now. I believe that we did extend that, but I'm not 100% certain. So if we could get back, that would be good.
Thank you. Next question is VNSNY Choice changing their MLTC care model. Increases in census continue to be reported, but I have not noticed any job postings for MLTC care coordinators. So I know that we had a dip in census back in April. There, you know, we had over 1,000 patients who died, and so there have been some declines in census. Overall, yes, the census has increased, but much of the add of patients is also offsets of losses of patients. So when you spread that over our entire region, it is not a significant number of case increases per care coordinator, because I do know that we are maintaining those numbers. So if there are vacancies, I'm sure that they are going to be posting those positions. So we are now at 11 o'clock. We got through a lot of questions, so thank you for asking those questions. And again, I wish you a safe and healthy Labor Day weekend. Enjoy the rest of your week and continue to please be careful. And hopefully you'll be able to join again next Tuesday. Thank you.